Chapter 27. Marina gives me a glowing account of you and says, Uzhe chuvestye osn, which is very Russian. Your grandmother would repeat regularly that already is to be felt autumn remark every year, at the same time, even on the hottest day of the season at Villa Armina. Marina never realized it was an anagram of the sea, not of her. You look splendid, Sinok Moy, but I can well imagine how fed up you must be with her two little girls. Therefore, I have a suggestion. Oh, I like them enormously, purred Van. Especially dear little Lucette. My suggestion is, come with me to a cocktail party today. It is given by the excellent widow of an obscure Major de Pré, obscurely related to our late neighbor. A fine shot, but the light was bad on the common, and a meddlesome garbage collector hollered at the wrong moment. Well, that excellent and influential lady, who wishes to help a friend of mine, clearing his throat, has, I'm told, a daughter of 15 summers called Cordula, who is sure to recompense you for playing blind man's buff all summer with the babes of Ardis Wood.
We played mostly Scrabble and Snap, said Vaughn. Is the needy friend also in my age group?
She's a budding doozer, replied Damon austerely, and the party is strictly a prof push. You'll stick to Cordula de Pré, I to Cordelia O'Leary.
D'accord, said Vaughn.
Cordula's mother, an overripe, overdressed, overpraised comedy actress, introduced Vaughn to a Turkish acrobat with tawny hairs on his beautiful orangutan hands and the fiery eyes of a charlatan, which he was not, being a great artist in his circular field. Vaughn was so taken up by his talk, by the training tips he lavished on the eager boy, and by envy, ambition, respect, and other youthful emotions, that he had little time for Cordula, round-faced, small, dumpy, in a turtleneck sweater of dark red wool, or even for the stunning young lady on whose bare back the paternal hand kept resting lightly as Damon steered her toward this or that useful guest. But that very same evening, Vaughn ran into Cordula in a bookshop, and she said,
By the way, Vaughn, I can call you that, can't I? Your cousin Ada is my schoolmate. Oh, yes. Now explain, please, what did you do to our difficult Ada? In her very first letter from Ardis, she positively gushed, our Ada gushed, about how sweet, clever, unusual, irresistible.
Silly girl. When was that?
In June, I imagine. She wrote again later, but her reply, because I was quite jealous of you, really I was, and had fired back lots of questions. Well, her reply was evasive and practically void of Vaughn.
He looked her over more closely than he had done before. He had read somewhere, we might recall the precise title if we tried, not Tyltyl, that's in Bluebeard, that a man can recognize a lesbian, young and alone, because a tailored old pair can fool no one, by a combination of three characteristics, slightly trembling hands, a cold in the head voice, and that skidding in panic of the eyes if you happen to scan with obvious appraisal such charms as the occasion might force her to show. Lovely shoulders, for instance. Nothing whatever of all that.
Yes, Madeleine, Petite Île, by Louis Pierre,
seemed to apply to Cordula, who wore a garbottish belted mackintosh over her terribly unsmart turtle and held both hands deep in her pockets as she challenged his stare. Her bobbed hair was of a neutral shade between dry straw and damp. Her light blue iris could be matched by millions of similar eyes in pigment-poor families of French estotti. Her mouth was doll pretty when consciously closed in a mannered pout so as to bring out what portraitists call the two sickle folds, which, at their best, are oblong dimples and, at their worst, the creases down the well-chilled cheeks of felt-booted apple cart girls. When her lips parted, as they did now, they revealed braced teeth, which, however, she quickly remembered to shudder. My cousin Ada, said Vaughn, is a little girl of 11 or 12 and much too young to fall in love with anybody except people in books. Yes, I too found her sweet, a trifle on the blue stocking side, perhaps, and at the same time impudent and capricious, but yes, sweet.
I wonder, murmured Cordula with such a nice nuance of pensive tone that Vaughn could not tell whether she meant to close the subject or leave it ajar or open a new one.
How could I get in touch with you? He asked. Would you come to River Lane? Are you a virgin?
I don't date hoodlums, she replied calmly, but you can always contact me through Ada. We are not in the same class in more ways than one.
Laughing,
she's a little genius. I'm a plain American ambivert. But we are enrolled in the same advanced French group, and the advanced French group is assigned the same dormitory, so that a dozen blondes, three brunettes, and one redhead, La Russe, can whisper French in their sleep.
Laughing, alone.
What fun! Okay, thanks. The even number means bunks, I guess. Well, I'll be seeing you, as the hoods say.
In his next coded letter to Ada, Vaughn inquired if Cordula might not be the lesbianochka mentioned by Ada with such unnecessary guilt.
I would as soon be jealous of your own little hand, Ada replied. What rot! Leave what's-her-name out of it.
But even though Vaughn did not know yet how fiercely untruthful Ada could be when shielding an accomplice, Vaughn remained unconvinced. The rules of her school were old-fashioned and strict to the point of lunacy, but they reminded Marina nostalgically of the Russian Institute for Noble Maidens in Yukonsk, where she had kept breaking them with much more ease and success than Ada or Cordula or Grace could at Brown Hill. Girls were allowed to see boys at hideous teas with pink cakes in the headmistress's reception room 3 or 4 times per term, and any girl of 12 or 13 could meet a gentleman's son in a certified milk bar just a few blocks away, every third Sunday, in the company of an older girl of irreproachable morals. Vaughn braced himself to see Ada thus, hoping to use his magic wand for transforming whatever young spinster came along into a spoon or a turnip. Those dates had to be approved by the victim's mother at least a fortnight in advance. Soft-toned Miss Cleft, the headmistress, rang up Marina, who told her that Ada could not possibly need a chaperone to go out with a cousin who had been her sole companion on day-long rambles throughout the summer.
That's exactly it, Cleft rejoined. Two young ramblers are exceptionally prone to intertwine, and a thorn is always close to a bud.
But they are practically brother and sister, ejaculated Marina, thinking, as many stupid people do, that practically works both ways, reducing the truth of a statement and making a truism sound like the truth.
Which only increases the peril, said Soft Cleft. Anyway, I'll compromise and tell dear Cordula de Pre to make a third. She admires Yvonne and adores Ada, consequently can only add zest to the zipper.
Stale slang, stale even then.
Gracious, what figgly-miggly,
mimsy-fimsy, said Marina, after having hung up. In a dark mood, unwarned of what to expect, strategic foreknowledge might have helped to face the ordeal, Vaughn waited for Ada in the school lane, a dismal back alley with puddles reflecting a sullen sky and the fence of the hockey ground. A local high school boy, dressed to kill, stood near the gate. A little way off, a fellow waiter. Vaughn was about to march back to the station when Ada appeared, with Cordula.
La bonne surprise,
Vaughn greeted them with a show of horrible heartiness.
And how goes it with you, sweet cousin? Ah, Cordula, who's the chaperone, you or Miss Veen?
The sweet cousin sported a shiny black raincoat and a down-brimmed oilcloth hat as if somebody was to be salvaged from the perils of life or sea. A tiny round patch did not quite hide a pimple on one side of her chin. Her breath smelled of ether.
Her mood was even blacker than his. He cheerily guessed it would rain. It did. Hard. Cordula remarked that his trench coat was chic. She did not think it worthwhile to go back for umbrellas. Their delicious goal was just around the corner. Vaughn said corners were never round, a tolerable quip. Cordula laughed. Ada did not. There were no survivors, apparently. The milk bar proved to be so crowded that they decided to walk under the arcades toward the railway station cafe. He knew, but could do nothing about it, that all night he would regret having deliberately overlooked the fact, the main agonizing fact, that he had not seen his Ada for close to 3 months, and that in her last note such passion had burned that the cryptogram's bubble had burst in her poor little message of promise and hope, bearing a defiant, divine line of uncoded love. They were behaving now as if they had never met before, as if this was but a blind date arranged by their chaperone. Strange, malevolent thoughts revolved in his mind. What exactly, not that it mattered, but one's pride and curiosity were at stake, what exactly had they been up to, those two ill-groomed girls, last term, this term, last night, every night, in their pajama tops, amid the murmurs and moans of their abnormal dormitory? Should he ask? Could he find the right words, not to hurt Ada, while making her bed filly know he despised her for kindling a child so dark-haired and pale, coal and coral, leggy and limp, whimpering at the melting peak? A moment ago, when he had seen them advancing together, plain Ada, seasick but doing her duty, and Cordula, apple-cankered but brave, like two shackled prisoners being led into the conqueror's presence, Vaughn had promised himself to revenge deceit by relating in polite but minute detail the latest homosexual, or rather pseudo-homosexual, row at his school. An upper-form boy, Cordula's cousin, had been caught with a lass disguised as a lad in the rooms of an eclectic prefect. He would watch the girls flinch. He would demand some story from them to match his. That urge had waned. He still hoped to get rid for a moment of dull Cordula and find something cruel to make dull Ada dissolve in bright tears, but that was prompted by his amour propre, not by their sale amour. He would die with an old pun on his lips. And why dirty? Did he feel any Proustian pangs? None. On the contrary, a private picture of their fondling each other kept pricking him with perverse gratification. Before his inner bloodshot eye, Ada was duplicated and enriched, twinned by entwinement, giving what he gave, taking what he took. Corrada, Adula. It struck him that the dumpy little countess resembled his first harlot, and that sharpened the itch. They talked about their studies and teachers, and Vaughn said, "I would like your opinion, Ada, and yours, Cordula, on the following literary problem. Our professor of French literature maintains that there is a grave philosophical and hence artistic flaw in the entire treatment of the Marcel and Albertine affair. It makes sense if the reader knows that the narrator is a pansy and that the good fat cheeks of Albertine are the good fat buttocks of Albert. It makes none if the reader cannot be supposed and should not be required to know anything about this or any other author's sexual habits in order to enjoy to the last drop a work of art. My teacher contends that if the reader knows nothing about Proust's perversion, the detailed description of a heterosexual male jealously watchful of a homosexual female is preposterous, because a normal man would only be amused, tickled pink, in fact, by his girl's frolics with a female partner. The professor concludes that a novel which can be appreciated only by quelques petites blanchisseuses, who has examined the author's dirty linen, is, artistically, a failure." "Ada, what on earth is he talking about? Some Italian film he has seen?" "Vaughn," said Ada in a tired voice, You do not realize that the advanced French group at my school has advanced no farther than to Racan and Racine.
Forget it, said Vaughn.
But you've had too much Marcel,
muttered Ada.
The railway station had a semi-private tea room supervised by the station master's wife under the school's idiotic auspices. It was empty, save for a slender lady in black velvet, wearing a beautiful black velvet picture hat, who sat with her back to them at a tonic bar, and never once turned her head. But the thought brushed him that she was a cocotte from Toulouse. Our damp trio found a nice corner table and, with sighs of banal relief, undid their raincoats. He hoped Ada would discard her heavy seas hat, but she did not, because she had cut her hair because of dreadful migraines, because she did not want him to see her in the role of a moribund Romeo.
On fait son grand joyce after doing one's petit Proust,
in Ada's lovely hand.
But read on. It is pure VV. Note that lady,
in Vaughn's Bedbouvard scrawl. As Ada reached for the cream, he caught and inspected her dead, shamming hand. We remembered the Camberwell beauty that lay tightly closed for an instant upon our palm, and suddenly our hand was empty. He saw with satisfaction that her fingernails were now long and sharp.
Not too sharp, are they, my dear? He asked for the benefit of Dura Cordula, who should have gone to the powder room, a forlorn hope.
Why, no, said Ada.
You don't, he went on, unable to stop. You don't scratch little people when you stroke little people. Look at your little girlfriend's hand, taking it. Look at those dainty short nails. Cold, innocent, docile little paw. She could not catch them in the fanciest satin. Oh, no, could you, Cordula.
Both girls giggled, and Cordula kissed Ada's cheek.
Vaughn hardly knew what reaction he had expected, but found that simple kiss disarming and disappointing. The sound of the rain was lost in a growing rumble of wheels. He glanced at his watch, glanced up at the clock on the wall. He said he was sorry. That was his train.
Not at all,
wrote Ada, paraphrased here, in reply to his abject apologies.
We just thought you were drunk. But I'll never invite you to Brownhill again, my love.